welcome to the Revenue Hub podcast. I'm Trevor Grant. Through these podcasts, we aim to discuss topics relevant to professionals within the hotel, travel and leisure sectors. Whether you're in a revenue management function, reservations, front office operations, digital marketing or sales, we hope the topics discussed will be of interest and either answer some questions or maybe prompt some more.
Hi, and welcome to another episode with the Revenue Hub, where we are talking again with our expert, Christoph Hutter. We are looking today at episode 4 of our series in buying a PMS. And today we are going to explore the actual vendors. So far we've looked at what actually the PMS is there to do. We've asked you to look at a number of elements that you should be considering before you're going out and starting to explore. In our last episode, we spoke about some of the features that you need to be considering and contemplating, where we touched on big areas around cloud or on-site hosting and connectivity and mobile first. And today now we're going to shift to the actual vendors, and we're going to start to look at the support element, a little bit on contracts, just as an upfront caveat. You know, we're not professing to be contract experts or legal experts, but Christoph is just going to give us some insight into some areas that you need to maybe be looking at and certainly paying a bit of attention to within the contract. And then we're going to look at actually the biggest topic that most people will probably have in the front of their mind, which is, okay, what's it actually going to cost us? So that's what we're going to look to try and cover off today. So I'd like to extend the welcome once more to Christoph. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. Hello, everyone.
Good to have you with us. So let's start off the episode with the first topic around support. We left it sort of hanging in our last episode where we were talking about the support as a core feature that you should be considering. The two link, you know, it's a core feature to having your PMS is what sort of support is it going to be there, and that will differ probably from each PMS vendor. So let's look into, from your experience, what are the elements we should be considering when we are evaluating the key support features we need from our vendor? Where would you start? What would be the first element you want to lock down above anything else?
So the first thing I would say, and I think a lot of hoteliers are going to agree on that point, is the support quality and especially the response time. We can see very, very frequently, and especially with larger vendors, that response time is not as fast as we would like it to be, especially for smaller hotels and independent hotels and even smaller groups. The response time can be, weeks sometimes for a simple question. And this is completely unacceptable. We're paying a lot of money for the system support. The fact that we don't get instant answers, this is 2019, folks. You don't need to put up with a vendor that does not get back to you in reasonable time. I'm not saying that every issue needs to be solved in 5 minutes. Some issues are actually real complex to solve, and they will take time. But a lot of things, they're either mere questions on how something works or minor issues that can be fixed with a couple of keystrokes, and no hotel should wait such a unreasonable amount of time for a solution.
But there's two issues in there, isn't there? Because one, I guess, is a response time, and that's a response to your question, whatever that exactly be about. And then the second element is time to actually solve that, because if, as you say, it's a couple of keystrokes, then the time to solve could be fairly short.
Exactly.
If, as you say, it's a more complex, the time to solve that is, by definition, going to be longer. However, when that clock starts ticking, depends on how quickly they've come back to you to recognize that you've, first of all, posed a question, and secondly, then engage with you to try and find out a bit more information to then work out how long this is going to take to solve. So if we're looking at response time initially, because we can't, the time to solve will be situational. But what would be realistic? I mean, from a hotel's perspective, what would you hope in 2019 a response time to be, i.e. you know, someone acknowledge, and I don't just mean some automated message, thank you for your message, we will be back in touch with you. When would you expect realistically someone to actually, an individual, a customer success manager or whatever, account manager, whatever the appropriate term is, what would you expect is an appropriate time frame for them to be back in contact to try and clarify what the problem is and resolve it?
Well, I would say it should be minutes. And there are vendors out there which publish their response time and their average response time. And there are vendors who say, you know, we get back to our clients within under 10 minutes. And that's how it should be. You know, I don't expect a solution in under 10 minutes. But I expect a response, an acknowledgement that, yes, we understand there is an issue for you. We're going to take care of that. We're hotels. We're in the hospitality industry. If a guest comes to us at the front desk and says, I have an issue, we'll not let them know that we will be back in the next 30 days. Yeah. That is not acceptable.
And checked out.
Exactly. They will be long gone. Now, we're locked into contracts with our vendors. We cannot just leave like that.
Yeah.
But we do have other options. And if you today are not happy with the kind of support you receive from your PMS provider, then it is really time to look at what your options are and evaluate if it is time to migrate to a different solution.
That's interesting. And you say some even, you know, whether it's on their website or they will quote, they will have some sort of analysis that they will share. They actually use it as a key selling point. Yeah, that their response time is within minutes.
Of course. So every software issue by every software vendor is being tracked. So when you open a ticket, you open a case, all that information is logged. So it's very easy to see from vendor side, well, when was the case opened and when was the first response? You know, there are systems out there and many hotels use CRMs themselves where they can see, well, we get a reservation request. How much time does it take us until we respond? We get a request for a group. How much time does it take the salespeople to actually get back to the client? Because we all know the faster we respond to a request, the higher the probability that we get the business. Well, with tech support, it is no different, except in that case, the sale is already made. We already are committed to that system. Now the vendor needs to follow through and provide the service that their salespeople claimed to have in the first place.
It's no different to if a guest raised an issue with you and you logged that issue and then looked at how long it would take you to respond to that guest and solve that problem.
Exactly. And you know, for a lot of the cases, the support contracts that we all sign when we bring a PMS on board, they can go into the tens of thousands of dollars annually to ensure that we receive support, which means that we should not have to wait for days before we get a call back to address whatever issue we had. No, this needs to be much faster. And the vendor side really needs to step up their game. We can see a lot of vendors, they do, and especially the newer players and smaller players definitely are ahead on that.
So I'm absolutely, you can tell by my pausing here, it's not struggling to frame a question. I'm actually astonished that from what you were saying to me, there are still vendors out there who have a technology solution in a hotel somewhere, and they aren't responding to that initial query within minutes. You're saying it could be longer than that in today's age?
Yes. Yes, unfortunately, with many vendors that I have worked with over the years, their average response time is in the realm of a couple of days.
Wow.
That is unfortunately still happening today. And it's unacceptable, you know. I want to clarify that in the case of a system outage, so if they're really the system fails, there may be another support line, an emergency number that you could do and say, hey, my system is out. I need the support immediately. And in that case, they probably would do something right away.
It elevates itself in severity, doesn't it? So they'll probably respond to that a bit quicker.
Exactly. And you know, the funny thing is that what I found out that with one vendor in particular, the wait time on the telephone for somebody to pick up the phone when I called was typically around 20 to 30 minutes.
Just when I called, on the phone waiting.
Yes. Yeah. So almost as great as calling an airline, you know.
please tell me they didn't have one of those recorded messages that says your call is so important to us.
Oh, that's why we're
keeping you waiting for 20 minutes.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, some of them have a nicer music than others. you know, what I realized was when I called from the hotel's number, I waited for 20 to 30 minutes. But if I called from another number, all of a sudden, I was put through instantly. So, I used an online service for that. So it was not an actual phone, but a voice over IP service. And what I realized is that what the vendors do is, of course, and I can understand it makes sense, the bigger clients, they will receive a reply faster than the independent hotel who has less weight. And so, you know, that was a huge realization for me. And you know, it helped me a lot because I didn't call from my landline anymore. When I called that vendor, I called with the internet number, and you know, they responded instantly.
And it's an interesting point you made. I mean, okay, we accept from a commercial point of view, a small group, an independent hotel is not as lucrative as a major chain.
And
I don't think anyone would argue with the commercial reality of that. But you're still a customer, and
exactly.
Within your, you know, that should be reflected within the support agreement. You know, if we're all grown up and an adult and we have a conversation and say, yeah, look, if you were spending X amount with us, you'd expect a support time within this period. You're a smaller client. It's not so if it's not mission critical, then it might take us a little bit longer. If you know that going into it, then your perception is set appropriately. You may not be happy, but you make that choice. But
yeah.
To be making that choice without that being communicated, that would seem like some pretty important questions to be able to clarify at the outset when you're looking to evaluate your pros and cons tick box of your vendors. Would that be fair?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, it's very important also to ask how the whole support process works. There are certain vendors out there, you just give them a call and they will respond to phone, hopefully not after too much of a wait time. There are other vendors which require you to log a case in their system, so you have to type it all out.
Put a ticket somebody, in or something. Yeah,
exactly. Somebody will get back to you. Even if you call them on the phone, it probably will be a call center agent which will open the case on your behalf and not always knows anything about the actual system. So that's something to clarify as well.
That makes sense.
There really is no point in waiting 20 minutes on the phone to then log a case that otherwise you could just type it out in 30 seconds.
Yeah, so is it someone taking your call, filling out the sheet that you could have filled out, and then that goes into the system, and then they they in a human voice are just saying, okay, well, we'll pass the, you know, we'll arrange for someone to get back in contact with you.
Yeah.
Or are you actually dealing with someone who could potentially solve your problem? Do you go straight through to one of the account managers or your customer success manager? And are they there able to deal with the problem for you? Yeah, that's I can see that. That's an important distinction as well.
And you know, you mentioned customer success manager or having an account manager, but that not necessarily means that those people are going to provide any support. So they may just be there to manage your account so that, you know, if there is a billing issue or anything like that, but they're not actually helping you with any questions regarding the system. And it's a different contact for that, where you're reaching out to an anonymous call center that is located, you know, somewhere in the world, and where the response quality is just not as high as you would wish it to be. So please make sure to discuss this with your sales rep before you sign any agreement, what that process looks like.
And as you say, whether your account manager is there to manage all of your account and handle most of the basics, the wrong word, but I think our listeners will know what I mean. You know, the basic questions that come up, the small little glitches that occur, do they have that base level of understanding of the system that they can solve that over the phone? If it's just something you say, hey, look, I've forgotten this, or hey, I'm having a problem with this, and they can fix it. If it's slightly more technologically complex, then yes, you're going to have maybe that would go to the implementation team, or there may be a different technology team that has to look at it. But you can live with that if you know that 75-80% of the normal, common, everyday problems can be solved by your first point of contact, for instance.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of the vendors and other, not just PMS, but many technology companies especially, they put out knowledge bases where you can research more or less easily what are the typical kind of questions, how do I do this and that. So every system will come with some kind of a help that you can read up on. Unfortunately, the quality of those help files is not always as high as I would like them to be, and especially as easy to understand, because we need to keep in mind that the people who will need the help maybe are not IT experts and maybe are not so familiar with technology, and the whole thing needs to be built in a way so they can also understand it. And if they don't find anything in the regular help, well, in almost all certainty, there will be somebody who before them already asked the question. So is there a knowledge base that, you know, they could just research easily and that answers the most important questions right there, so that there's no real need for any interaction with the support person? I've seen a lot of knowledge bases out there that are unfortunately you can't really research them very effectively. So whatever comes out of them is not of any quality at all. So you have to go through the process anyways. You know, I've seen forums where other users can help, because, you know, there are some people who will know the system far better than others, and you know, having a peer kind of peer-to-peer support that can help a lot, and would also take a lot of the heavy weight off the vendor, so they can focus on bigger issues.
I often find the knowledge base just purely personal, nothing to do with PMSs, just generally technology. The knowledge bases just wind me up, because your ability for them to actually answer the question and to be able to use their search function to get to where you want to be, or, you know, their hierarchy in terms of helping you to get to the point that you want to get to. It's often been, we don't want to invest money in hiring people to be our support staff, so let's put a lot of the regular questions that we get in a knowledge base, but then those questions build up over time. And so trying to find them and work your way through them, you almost spend longer So I get to a point which is, it would have been quicker just to have picked up the phone and tried to speak to someone, even if I am sitting there waiting for 10, 15 minutes. And sometimes, you know what it's like? You read it, you see the answer, but you don't quite get it. So you have to phone anyhow. And so it's often easy just to phone somebody in the first place. Or sometimes they have like live chats as well. The live chat can work quite well.
Yeah, I personally love live chats, and I use them whenever I can, because I know that typically the response time and quality works really well for me, and that is really not restricted to PMS alone. That goes to every aspect. Whenever I need to find out something, if there is a live chat, I'm going to use it, because I don't have to wait on the phone. I type in my question. Whenever the agent is ready to answer my question, I will receive an answer. And, you know, I'm still surprised, to be very honest, that we in the hospitality industry have not already made it a standard that every hotel has their own live chat on their website. I don't understand it. It's one of the first things that I recommend to hotels. Please put a live chat on the website. Your revenue is going to go up so much, because this is how people communicate today. And it's no different for any kind of tech support or for any kind of sales, you know. You want an information, you type in your question, and whoever is the first to answer will answer that question. And it's much faster than phone calls. It's much more efficient. It's much easier on the vendor side. So live chats are really, really a huge improvement. And those vendors who integrate a live chat already in their system, so basically you're logging into their system, and there's this little live chat button right there. So my user who has a question can just type it in, hey, can you please remind me how do I do this? Where do I find that? And within 10 minutes, I have my response to where I find it. That's fantastic.
I like it as well. Just again, this is not, you know, about personal choice, but I like the fact that then you get emailed the conversation. Because sometimes I'm at a point where I can do the live chat, but I can't necessarily resolve all of those problems there and then. But having chatted it through, I've then got the steps in that chat that I can then pull off of the email and go and deal with it at a later time. I mean, that's not always what you're trying to do. I get that. But I like having a sort of a written narrative of that dialogue. Rather than me having to sit there and write it all out while I'm talking to the person on the other end of the phone.
Exactly. It's so helpful. Yeah, I just love it.
And so I guess then what we've you've spoken about the you know, so looking at response time, time to solve we've touched on could be different depending on the case. What can lead to that is, okay, their support setup. Do they have account managers, customer success people? Are they the technology solutions, or are they the kind of the account manager to keep things ticking over, check you're okay, deal with billings or minor issues? So that's important to look at. Do they have a knowledge base? Maybe worth looking at that before you get into the conversation. Does it seem to make sense? Do they have forums? With maybe a peer-to-peer element in it? Is there a live chat piece on it? One of the things that frustrates me so much in 2019 is when I have to work within someone else's business hours, because if I happen to find a problem, Sometimes there are problems that aren't mission critical that I can park to get to later on in my day when I've got time to deal with it. And there's nothing more frustrating than trying to deal with that problem, reaching out to your supplier, and then becoming aware that their support only works business hours. And you might be out of sync because of time differences. I recognize there's a cost from a vendor point of view, but 24/7 support, particularly I would think from a hotel's point of view, particularly at nighttime, when you maybe have a lower staffing numbers, I would think that's probably more critical in certain industry sectors than it would be in others.
Yeah. So a PMS that would not offer 24/7 support, I don't think any hotel could realistically accept that, because, you know, we operate 24/7. We have guests on site 24/7, and we have in many cases, I mean, it will depend on the hotel, but in many cases, there will also be staff on site 24/7. But if the support is not available whenever an issue could occur, and an issue can always happen at any point in time, that and especially if it's mission critical, that needs to be solved. So I need to be able to call them, and they need to be able to fix it right away.
I mean, surely there can't be a single vendor that's not offering 24/7. I mean, if they don't offer 24/7, I mean, they would. I have to be careful what I say here, but if they're not 24/7, they would be getting a line through their name before I could even go any further.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have not come across a vendor that doesn't offer 24/7 support. The question is only what kind of a support level do you offer? And, you know, I also probably won't need to know how to find a certain report in the system at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's barely that critical. So that's something that can probably wait until the next morning. So I also need to be a little bit conscious on the hotel side. What is it that I need, and how urgently do I need it?
And that might come back to your earlier point when you said if the system goes down, they might have a different way of handling that kind of challenge, where that might fit under a 24/7 emergency line, whereas general non-outage questions may fit within business hours, and that you can understand.
Yeah, and so, you know, it will depend on what the hotel is comfortable with, and you know, they will talk to the sales rep and find out, and you know, it's part of the entire decision-making process.
And I guess all of these things, I mean, moving us on from the actual discussion around support into then how this is annotated, you need this stuff in black and white. So, I mean, the contracts, these are key areas within the contract that, you know, you almost want to be looking at what the standard contract looks like, I would guess, to at least get a sense of how they are structured right from the outset. You may be negotiating bits within that contract if there is that flexibility to do it. Some might just say, well, that's our standard contract, take it or leave it. But I guess these elements around the support are going to be pretty key, that they should be sitting within that contract, because you need to be able to hold somebody to account.
Exactly. For me, the support quality really, and I see that so many times, is one of the main reasons why hotels decide they want to switch to a different system, because they're just not able to operate their hotel effectively anymore whenever there is an issue and they're not receiving the support they need. So I would absolutely say, you know, make sure that you look through the contract and see what it says about the support quality. What is the average response time? What is the maximum response time? And what is the time to resolution? Those are three very, very important things. And it will be tricky from a vendor point of view to stipulate times in there, but especially things like outage, system outage. A lot of technology contracts stipulate what is the maximum amount of time that is permitted by contract that the system is out, because they need to do a big maintenance job and have to switch off all their servers or things like that. That can be scheduled maintenance that will cause, you know, the system to go down for a certain period of time. This is not, you know, something that is unknown in the industry. It does happen. So we need to make sure that this is stipulated in the contract, so that we're also aware of what it will mean down the road for our hotel.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And so in terms of one of the things we didn't talk about on the support bit, but I guess we need to make sure is in the contract and does come into the support, is around training. What training is there at the beginning? What training, ongoing training there is? What are your sort of recommendations based on your experience and what you're aware of out there?
In regards to training, I really I think that this is one of the things that many hotels underestimate the most. Mm-hmm. And it is oftentimes, related to cost, unfortunately. So what it means is when the the contract is signed and then we process through the configuration and going live, we need our people to learn about the system.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, they need to know how to enter the reservation, how to check out a person and all these keystrokes.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time to train the people. And every vendor is going to offer, obviously, some sort of training. And the quality of training is where vendors will also differentiate from others. It takes a lot of time to wrap your head around an entire different way of working, mm-hmm. because no system is alike, because if they were the same, why would we change it, right?
Sure.
So we will have to relearn how to do our everyday job. That will take a lot of brain power on our end to wrap our head around all that. And so the vendor needs to provide us with the framework of the training initially, mm-hmm. before we even go live to get through that. And before we train our staff, we ourselves are probably going to need training in preparation for the entire configuration of the system.
Yeah.
Because again, the new system most likely is going to work very differently from the old system, which means that the way how things are configured possibly are completely different. Maybe the entire logic of how we enter pricing or how inventory is controlled and things like that, maybe that entire logic is completely different. So we need to think about, well, how are we going to do that with the new system? Mm-hmm. So we need training beforehand on a higher level. So the key people of the hotel, they need to understand how the system is going to work so that SOPs can be adapted and we can see how we will want to work with the system. And once we have figured it all out, once we have configured the PMS, then we can train the rest of the staff, front desk, reservations, housekeeping, maintenance, everyone really who needs to work with the PMS.
And I guess then what you then have, and maybe the vendors will have different levels of training that you can buy into, but you know, we're all very different. Some are more technologically savvy than others are. Some will want the training just for themselves to feel comfortable and confident that they're making the right choice, because if they'll think, well, if I know how to use this, it'll be okay. But the thought of them training others could bring them out in the cold sweat. There then would need to be some facility where they could then be providing training to maybe some of their core members who are going to be interacting. So let's say you've got somebody at your front office who's maybe handling the revenue and reservations piece, you know, wearing multiple hats, getting them trained up on the system, because they're going to be doing a lot of the interfacing with it from a pricing point of view as well. You know, rather than you having to train them, if you're nervous about it, at least being able to buy that training in, or if ideally have it as part of the package, you know, that's going to be really useful to know and explore those at this early stage before you go into making those final decisions.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, when we're deciding on what level of training we want to have, please don't save any money on there, because any money you're going to save on training is going to cost you tenfold or even more later. Because if your people don't know how the system works and how to use it properly and effectively and efficiently, you're going to do things not in the optimal way down the road. And that's going to cost a lot of money, far, 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 far more money than any training could ever cost. So training is really one of the key things that we need to put a really special focus on before we migrate to a new system.
As you say, it's hard to quantify, isn't it, after the event, how much not having that training is costing you in maybe people not using the system as effectively and efficiently as they could do. That is a cost. And also by not using it to maybe its maximum potential, it's the opportunity cost. What additional revenues are being lost that could be gained? And it's very hard to be able to quantify that, because in a lot of ways you spend a lot of time making the decision to buy a system, and then once it's in, you just expect it to work. You don't keep going back and revisiting it continually to check that it's being used to its full capacity. I guess that's what the vendor's account manager or customer success manager is trying to ensure, that you're getting the maximum out of it. But if they can do that and they can make their phone calls and keep in touch with you, but if you're not engaged in that process, if you're not looking to make sure, are we using this to the maximum, then you're just using it to the level to which you've been trained to use it.
Yeah. And, you know, when we have this scenario where we're migrating to a new PMS, I have seen it so many times that a hotel goes with a PMS and another hotel goes with the same PMS. And just because it's the same software doesn't mean that it works in the same way, because you configure it differently depending on the needs of every single hotel. And there may be fields that are set up in the one PMS but not exist in the other PMS. There may be certain ways how the system is configured in terms of how the rate structure works, for example, how rate loading works, or simply in terms of accounts, in terms of profiles, what kind of profile to use in what scenario. That depends on whatever is configured during the initial setup process. And what that means is that if the hotel itself does not fully understand how they could use the system, they're not going to use the system to its full potential. It can be, for example, that we have a PMS that is connected to a central reservation system. What that means is every reservation that we have in the PMS, if it's a two-way interface to the CRS, every reservation that is in the PMS is automatically going to be copied into the CRS. Every reservation that is in the CRS is going to be copied automatically into the PMS. So we have the reservation sitting in both systems. But in order for that to work correctly, and for reservation updates to work correctly, the systems need to recognize that reservation. So there needs to be a number basically assigned to that, so that the system can understand the back and forward. In that entire process, we have a guest profile attached to that reservation. We all are probably going to be familiar with the scenario where we have multiple profiles for the same guest. That can happen because of how the system is configured and how the CRS and the PMS are talking to each other.
Okay.
And you know, if the hotel is not aware of how it needs to be set up, so that also down the road, once the initial configuration where maybe everything worked correctly because there was the on-site installer who made sure that everything is installed as it should be, but if the key people in the hotel are not aware of what they need to do to make that work moving forward, so they need to assign certain codes and mappings and things like that,
yeah.
Then the system down the road is not going to work anymore as it should. And it's just going to create headache after headache,
yeah.
Until one day we will be so frustrated that we will say we want to switch PMS to something else. But the only reason why we want to switch is because we don't know how to use our system in the first place.
Yeah.
So instead of spending a large amount of money on a new system, maybe we just want to get a trainer from the current system on site for a couple of weeks to make sure that we learn everything about the system that we need to do and fine-tune it to our actual needs.
It's easier to blame somebody else than to look at yourself not doing it properly.
Yeah.
And as you say, but then that's cutting the cost at the front end, isn't it, on the training, which is what you recommend you shouldn't do. That's a part of the budget that you really need to see. That's a bit where maybe I probably need to spend more than I maybe think I ought to spend.
Yes. And, you know, especially in the training phase where Every hotel staffer comes into a room and the vendor explains how the system works. For example, how do I enter a reservation? This is so important that we go through that process, that every agent really learns how to properly enter reservations so that all the data we record is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we use data in revenue management. We use data in marketing. If the data entry on reservation level is not as best as it could be, revenue, marketing are not going to take the best decisions afterwards. So this all impacts. So we need to make sure that they receive really, really good training. And of course, in the initial phase, it's going to be very, very much information in a relatively short period of time. So we need to make sure that the setting of that initial training is as favorable as possible. That means we need to have a really good room where we can conduct the training, and everybody should have their own computer where we where they can follow the keystrokes. I have seen training environments where four or five people are sharing a screen. They're not going to learn anything at all, you know. And if your hotel does not have the meeting room capacity to do all that, well, then maybe find another location where you can conduct that training. But you need to be able to have everybody doing the keystrokes themselves, because if they don't learn then, it will be much, much harder and more expensive to train them later.
But if you recognize and you buy into, yeah, I can see the point that the training is pretty critical, I need to put the budget aside for that, then you pretty well better damn well make sure that you then get trained as best as you possibly can. I mean, to put aside the budget and spend the money and then not enable your people to get the maximum out of that training, you may as well have just saved yourself the money and not bothered in the first place.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so we've touched a bit on evaluating what the support is that the vendor can offer. We've looked at the contract around some of the elements that, you know, we need to be ensuring is in the contract or is referenced in the contract, and then maybe some side agreement that doesn't sit purely within the contract to stipulate some of the numbers around training and support. Are there any other, again, you know, we're not legal experts on contracts, so we're not going into the minutiae, and also it would bore the hell out of everybody listening probably. But apart from support being a key factor in the contract to just see what is covered, is there any other single factor or other couple of factors that you would say to people, okay, make sure you look at this area of the contract, or make sure you look at where does it talk about this part in the contract?
So one of the things that I have experienced is that when a hotel decides to change some of their IT setup, so they bring in another third-party system, like a different POS or another kind of system, one of the typical interfaces, maybe a different Wi-Fi system, or you know, any of these things that need to interface with the PMS. I've seen that some vendors are not very fast in making that integration happen.
Okay,
and I've seen hotels being on a wait list for interfacing the new PMS with the new POS with the PMS for over a year's time. And again, that's completely unacceptable, because that means for an entire year I have to post every transaction once in the PMS and then again in the once in the POS and again in the PMS, because there is no interface. And the only reason there is no interface is because the PMS vendor doesn't make it happen. So it's one of the things that you will really want to stipulate in the contract, how much time is allowed for these things to take. And I'm not talking about having a system that does not interface with my PMS. Because of course, if there is no interface and I decide I want to go with that POS, well, then I have to wait until the two tech companies figure out how the two systems can talk to each other. That's understandable. But if I buy a system that should interface with my existing PMS, and it's one of the decision criteria why I buy this POS, then it's completely unacceptable that there's a year's wait time for them to be connected.
Yeah.
So that is one of the things where I would say, please make sure that is in the contract in some way, as to not wake up one morning and find out that now you have a headache you didn't need to have. And then how is the entire project management around this kind of thing going to be? So I have had CRS integrations, for example, where I had a project manager assigned on either side. So a project manager on the CRS side, a project manager on the PMS side, just to make sure that this transition goes as smoothly as possible. Mm-hmm. And those are experts to do these kind of transactions. They do that all day long. They're project manager for CRS integration, so they know exactly what needs to happen. And I mentioned the example earlier, where, you know, if you have a system with a two-way interface to a PMS, to a CRS, you have a copy of every reservation in the two systems, which means if you go and migrate to a new system, a new PMS, you don't need to enter every single reservation from scratch. You just copy them all over from the CRS. Mm-hmm. But that needs to be configured, that needs to be set up, that needs to be decided on before. And so you need to make sure that, that you're talking to the vendor and ask, how is something like that going to work? What is the process for that? What are the time frames, the durations, and these kind of things?
Yeah, makes sense. So of the three things we were looking at covering, we've covered support. We've spoken about some of the key areas that you should be focusing on in the contract. I guess the third part, and ultimately, I guess what it all comes down to, is then the cost. But there are many different elements to the cost. So let's kind of try and work our way through them. What's the starting point? You go to any vendor, you ask them, what's it going to cost me? And they will give you a figure. I mean, what does that figure include? Would that differ from vendor to vendor? Is there a standard, okay, you pay this, you get that, and that's the same with everybody?
There are definitely going to be differences between one vendor and the other. But typically what we're looking at is there will be a cost for the installation. Mm-hmm. So that will vastly different from one vendor to the other, because some systems are simply more complex to configure, more complex to set up than other systems from a vendor point of view. So it is more labor intensive on their end to build that hotel in their system. Okay. So of course the cost related to that is going to be higher than with other systems where maybe a lot of these keystrokes are done by the hotel itself. Mm-hmm. So that's just, you know, one thing that you will need to find out in the process. Who does what and what does it entail?
So it might look cheaper, but it might involve more time your end, which maybe, you know, there's a cost to that, because if you're not doing your job because you're configuring or someone's configuring, that's a cost somewhere to the business.
Exactly. And since typically in most hotels we're running at staff levels that are rather on the low side of what is doable, everybody who basically drops out because now they have to do something that is not part of their everyday role, like a PMS migration, well, that person will just not have their 8 hours a day to do their core job anymore. And that means that the business is going to take a hit in whatever level or in whatever capacity that person is. And if it is your revenue manager that is taking care of the PMS migration, well, that is an enormous cost, and the amount of revenue that you're probably going to lose because that person who brings in a lot of the revenue is not doing their core job anymore, but working on something else, that can be astronomical. There can be hundreds of thousands of dollars right there. So better think twice if you want that person to do that and what you need to do in order to support that person so that the regular operations run smoothly. And, you know, it may really be just more cost effective to either let the PMS vendor take care of whatever they can do or to work with a consultant or some external expert on getting the help that you need in terms of project management or anything like that.
Yeah, well, at least you know you can quantify the cost, can't you? You sort of say, right, it's going to cost me this and that's for this piece and I'm not distracting from my normal operations and what my staff are there to do day to day. Because you're paying them to do a job, and the moment you take them off that, who's doing their
exactly.
job?
Exactly. And, you know, as soon as the negative reviews are going to come in, you will notice that I didn't have as much time to spend on guest service as I would have wanted to spend.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we got the core installation. What other costs will we see kind of built into their, maybe their initial upfront costings?
So the integration of any third-party interfaces, so your PMS, your POS, your point of sale, your sales and catering system, your minibar system, wake-up calls, Wi-Fi, you know, pay TV, anything that you really have that integrates with your current PMS, you will want to keep that integrating in the future, and there will be a fee on the PMS vendor side, and there may be an additional fee on the interface partner side. So your POS may charge you a fee for switching PMS.
Well, I wouldn't have considered that. That's worth bearing in mind.
Yeah, you know, and it goes beyond that because, for example, if you have a revenue management system, switching the PMS already doesn't just come with a cost for a new interface potentially, but it may require an entire reconfiguration of your revenue management system, which means that there very possibly is going to be fees similar to the overall onboarding fees that you had in the first place when you launched their RMS. You need a project manager on the RMS side. You need your internal resources to reconfigure the RMS to the new requirements. Same goes with the CRS. If you switch PMS, the entire coding of room type codes, rate codes, market segment codes, profile codes, all these things, they need to be changed to the new system. Somebody has to do all that, right? So those are a lot of considerations that we maybe don't even think about when we think, oh yeah, I just, you know, switch out the PMS, bringing the new PMS, and things are going to keep running smoothly. They will if you prepare well enough in advance.
Yeah. So installation, third-party interface integration. I guess the last topic we were talking about, we touched on training. So I guess there'll be an element in there of training. And back to that point that we said about quantifying what that actually means, what you're actually going to get. What else would normally be included in that initial upfront cost?
There will be the support cost, which is basically going to be the annual cost that you will have then moving forward. So the initial cost, the setup fee, if you like, that's going to be a one-time cost in the beginning of the project to cover all the cost the vendor has first. But then the ongoing cost is going to cover things like hosting in case of a cloud solution and the support that you have, depending on what kind of a support level you sign up for. There are different, you know, pricing models for different vendors for that as well. And, you know, it can either be something that is going to be built on an annual level. So once a year, you get a big fat invoice, or maybe you agree on a monthly or quarterly payment where these payments are a little bit more spread out over the year. And, you know, there can be advantages and disadvantages to both of them in regards to cash flow and all these kind of considerations.
One quick question on that, just because it just prompted it, so I don't forget it. When you go onto some of these vendor sites and you go to pricing, they talk about monthly pricing. So it's a monthly cost, and depending on how many rooms your hotel has, it would be a cost, and there may be different bands. Is that what you're talking about there as the kind of the running maintenance cost? Because if I'm landing on there as a hotelier and I'm just, you know, I've been used to an old system, I'm hearing about this cloud-based, I go and look at these vendors, that's not my initial upfront cost that I'm looking at there. If it's saying, oh, it's going to cost you $25 a month, I'm not looking and saying, wow, I'm going to get a great new PMS system for $300. That's just the maintenance cost. I mean, you may not know the answer to this because different vendors may price it differently, but I looked at it and thought, wow, that looks a pretty reasonable cost. But what I'm hearing here, and this is why I'm asking the clarification question, is do I have a separate installation? I expect a different training cost, but do I have a separate installation getting me set up cost? And then the cost that's on the website is just my kind of running monthly annual cost. Did that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. It really will depend on each individual vendor because their systems just work vastly different. Like I said, you know, in some cases, there is quite a lot of configuration and pre-configuration involved on the vendor side versus other systems, more recent systems, they're already built with all that in mind. They're sitting in the cloud. In the cloud, everybody has the same kind of system at hand, and the hotelier just goes in there and configures it all with all their room numbers and room types and market segments and rate codes and their individual people. So there really is not that much to do on the vendor side, which means that they don't really have that much of an initial cost. And they just factored that part in into the monthly.
They just build that into the monthly cost. Okay, so yeah. It may include the whole installation early piece of it, because they're not actually installing anything. You're going in, it's in the cloud, you're configuring it, it's, you know, you're the user, you just pay this amount a month and it's nice and clean and you know what it's costing you.
Okay. Exactly, yeah.
But I guess, again, it's just, you know, the point of this is to say to listeners, just keep that in mind. Don't assume that that price is everything. It may be, but make sure you're asking the questions.
Yeah, you know, it's like buying an airplane ticket. It's advertised for $5 and then you pay $300 at the end of the day.
So. You work your way through the process and you're suddenly being charged for everything.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we've got training, interface, annual costs, installation. Any other bits that you might find in there, kind of the upfront elements?
One very important factor is, over time, what is the annual price increase that is permitted in the contract? And the contract really should probably speak to that.
Okay, yeah, good point.
Because otherwise, I sign up for a certain amount, and then the next year, they increase the price by 20%. That's probably not going to work so well for me, right? Because I can't account for that. So I really need to know, okay, the price can be around inflation plus X percent or, you know, something like that. And I'm sure that the hotels that are listening, they have signed similar contracts in the past. But that is definitely something you need to think about. And another very, very important point linked to that is if you're purchasing a PMS that is distributed outside of your country. So let's say you are in the UK, I'm in Canada. If I buy a British PMS, then they're going to probably sell it to me in British pound.
And then you've got the conversion.
And then I have the conversion. And especially with the current situation, well, that may be right now actually quite positive for me, so let's buy products. The other way around may not be very favorable to you, because if you want to buy a Canadian PMS, all of a sudden the exchange rate may go through the roof and you're sitting with a 20-30% increase. And you know, the reason I'm speaking to that is because I've been in the situation where we bought for Canadian hotels, we bought American software, and then the dollar all of a sudden changed, and that did add a huge amount of money on the bills. So from that point onwards, you know, I make very much sure that there is a stipulation on exchange rate in any contracts, or even an agreement on a price in my local currency.
What other? So now that we've gone from sort of looking at the upfront costs, what else do I need to be aware of? What other costs am I going to face over the duration?
So we spoke about training quite a bit already and how important that is. One thing that I would love hotels to do is a few months after you go live and you have made your experience with the system and you come to learn the new system and in the ins and outs, get somebody to come again and retrain you, because it is very possible that in all that information you received in the very beginning, you just didn't hear some of the things, you didn't understand some of the things, and you forgot some of the things. It's completely normal. It's a huge amount of information we receive in a short period of time. So if you have somebody to come back a few months in and retrain you and your staff, that can improve the overall system performance enormously. And so over time, that means you're going to just make more revenue because you use your system in a better way.
Makes sense. We touched on it in the previous episode when we were talking about sort of cloud-based and on-site hosting, about keeping up to date, upgrading. I mean, I guess, as we discussed in some detail there, you know, the cloud-based model, I guess, as they make a change, it just adjusts to the system that you're accessing through the internet. But are you being charged for that update as well, or is it just something that you are paying for? Is that rolled into your, or maybe that's the question, you know, you need to check, is that something that you will pay separately for, or is it something that's just rolled into your monthly and they build that into the cost anyhow?
if the vendor is fair, it's definitely built into the regular cost if you go with a cloud-based solution, because one of the main advantages from a vendor point of view, but also from a hotelier point of view, is that you're getting all the updates. You're always on the most recent version. That means it's always the highest performing version. It has maybe new features added to it. There are patches to bugs, security patches, all these kind of things that are really essential and very helpful. They automatically come. While if you're having a solution that is hosted on site, you have to schedule your own updates basically, and whenever you decide to go with one, there very likely is going to be a charge for that. So for the cloud-based solution, typically I see that to be built in the overall contract, which doesn't mean that it couldn't be a vendor out there which is smart enough to, from their point of view, to write it in the small print in the contract that every update is X amount of money, and it's just an added cost that is not so visible at first. So make sure that that is stipulated in the contract.
It's just worth checking.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got the upfront costs with the installation. We've got the all the interfaces, we've got the training and retraining, we've looked at upgrades and updates. What else? Are we missing any other, what other costs have we not spoken about that might be there that we need to just consider and be aware of?
There are a couple of things that I want to mention. And one is something that's in many cases a hidden cost.
Don't like those.
And that's,
don't like hidden costs.
No, we don't like that at all. It's things that could potentially be included in the initial setup cost. So when you migrate to the new system and you have somebody dedicated to helping you through that process from vendor side, they're going to set up your system. But any change to that system, for example, you add another room type or you add a new room. So instead of having 100 rooms, then you have 101 rooms, or you're taking one away, so you have 99 rooms. Those things may be billed, so that may not be free. If you have a confirmation letter and then you want to change something in that confirmation letter, because maybe you want a new translation in another language, or you want to change the wording, or you have a new website, so all the links in the confirmation email don't work anymore because the links on the website changed. So that's also something that I see very frequently when hotels change their websites. They don't change the booking confirmations. All the links point to things that don't exist on the new website anymore. So just some note to watch that. Any change to these confirmation letters or contracts or anything like that that you're printing out of the system or emailing out of the system, that could be potentially charged as well. So you need to be very clear in stipulating in the contract what is included and what is not included.
Understood. So these would be what bits are self-configured that you can do and change and you can access and move around. And then what other bits does the vendor have to change? And if the vendor needs to change it, is there a cost, or is that cost for change built into your monthly fee, or is it part of maybe the if they separate out the upfront initial installation and training and they have a separate sort of recurring annual cost, are a certain number of changes built into that recurring annual cost? Maybe the different ways that it can be configured, but that's an important point to clarify.
We know that oftentimes, you know, maybe not so much in this day and age, but a few years ago, before everybody had their website hosted on WordPress platform, websites were built in actual HTML code. So any change had to be done by your web developer. That means if you changed a picture, your developer would have to do that. While today, you just go into WordPress, you go into the content part, switch out the image, and that's that. Takes you 2 minutes and it's done. In the old days, you had to send that picture over to your web developer, and they would then change that and probably send you $1,000 bill for that.
Charge you for an hour's work.
Yeah, you know, they charge you for 5 minutes worth of work, a very large amount of money. And, you know, that's exactly what happens in some cases with certain PMSs that, things that, you know, they shouldn't shouldn't be that complicated. If I want to change a link in a confirmation email, I should be able to do that myself. And if I can't do it myself, there certainly shouldn't be any charge for that.
Yeah. And again, these are all key points. I mean, we've looked at so many factors over the previous three episodes. I guess that's what we're trying to do, hopefully, is take people through a number of questions and points to consider and to ask that helps them to navigate their way through to what hopefully might be just two or three that they then get to choose from. And because we've been able to narrow it down in a fairly quantifiable way, then you get to a point where it then becomes more an emotive decision. And how do you engage with those companies? How do you feel about those companies? Do they align with you as individual when you're meeting with the sales guys? If you're talking with the account managers, if they're a smaller company, it may be some of the original founders that you're still discussing with. And then you start to find a connection on a slightly different level, but at least you know you're in the right kind of space because you've done a lot of that evaluation at the upfront. That's how I kind of thought of this process as we've kind of worked through these.
Yeah, you know, as an example, I can say that when I first was introduced to cloud computing, cloud software, I just thought, okay, why would I buy a cloud-based product where I have an ongoing fee in perpetuity versus something that I buy once and then it's mine kind of approach? And you know, so it took me a while before I realized what are the considerations that actually speak for cloud-based solutions. And today, as I said earlier, I would lean for most hotels more towards a cloud-based solution because it just takes a lot of the headaches away. And you know, if we're talking about a large chain, that may be different because the large chain has the resources to manage all these things themselves, while an independent hotel and a smaller group, they don't necessarily have the necessary IT resources. So a cloud solution makes more sense. And those are the things that I wanted to share with you all, that there's just a lot of things to think about and to consider in the PMS purchasing process, things that we just don't think about every day. Because we don't buy a different PMS every day, at least not many among us, or among the hoteliers are going to buy many PMSs. And those who are fortunate enough to look back already on a longer career, maybe they have been through a number of migrations already. Still, we will discover new things. And it's just, you know, a lot to think about. And that's why we share this information with you all.
Absolutely. That's the point of putting the podcast together and hopefully lead people on that journey. I think on that note, I think we pretty much have come to the end of this discussion around the support, the contract and the cost. But we'll be looking, so in the next episode, we'll be looking at, okay, so what are the things we want to actually be checking around productivity? So that's what we're going to touch on. But thank you again for your time today, Christoph. If anyone wants to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to contact you? Is it to? I mean, obviously they can Google your name. So Christoph Hutter, Hutter. But you also have a website.
Yeah, so you can always find my contact information on christophhutter.com. Or as Trevor, as you said, just Google me and you'll probably see me popping up.
Google knows you. You're that well known. You'll come up somewhere in there. Thanks so much for that time and look forward to catching up with you on the next episode.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
So that's the end of today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you had any questions or future topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via content@revenue-hub.com. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, like, and tell your colleagues and friends. Catch you next time.